Today on the Inside Flap.
I was touring with a band that did get bored one night, and they really wanted to trash the room, but they were also really nice guys. They filled the dresser completely with beer bottles, and then they might have turned it on end, but it was nothing that, you know, like, there was no actual damage. The bottles were empty. It would be like some work, but it was really minor, but they really wanted to do something.
Right, you know? Right.
The babysitter gets there. She's late. And so he takes off, leaves this new babysitter with the kids and stuff like okay. that. And we're like all gathered outside.
Uh-huh.
So apparently one of the reasons the babysitter was late is because she had to sober up enough in order to be able to make the drive.
Oh,
to, what?
To babysit.
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. My name is Dave Medicus. Thank you for joining us today. Seated across the table to my right is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
And across the table to my left is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. We sit here recording on a Sunday morning for a change. Mm-hmm.
And not just any Sunday morning.
No. I guess this day comes around once a year. It is. That's right. I know a lot of you. Now, a lot of people out there listening are very excited about this day. A lot of you guys I know have spent, 7 months waiting the arrival of this day. That's right. It is NFL opening weekend. And we are all pumped up about it. Andrew's pumped up for his Baltimore Ravens.
Two out of three.
Andrew.
Two out of three.
You ready? Ravens going to have a good year. Should we have a little football talk?
Just a little bit, but I, you know.
Andrew's hair looks insane.
Yeah, so. He came staggered up the walk this morning. I'm peeking out the window. I said, I don't know if I can do a podcast staring
Dave
at a guy.
He really did. He's like, I don't know if I can stare at Andrew.
He looks like
his hair's out of control.
Doc Brown from, Christopher Lloyd and Back to the Future. If his hair was white, you know, the way it's sticking up.
But it's not.
Andrew has lovely curly locks, and they just happen to be standing
waving
up
in the wind. How are the Ravens going to be this year?
Well, first of all,
here's a guy who loves the Ravens so much he named his dog Raven.
Well, that's another story. But
I know.
So I've got this lovely brown hair, and the thing is,
lovely.
I use the word lovely. Yeah, it is lovely. He's a nice head of hair.
And so I would love to go to work with my hair all unruly and things like that. Unfortunately, I work in a corporate environment,
so
I have to live it up on the weekend, and so. Our dog is indeed named Raven.
Yes.
But she's a Cavapoo.
Yeah. I don't think it's after the Ravens, is it?
No.
I know. That's the twist.
Yes. Her litter name was Raven.
Uh-huh.
And so we decided that it was fate, and that's the dog we would get. Now, I should say that ever since we got her, the Ravens have not had a single successful football season.
Oh, no.
Not that you're keeping track or anything. Wow. Yeah.
Now, it surprises me you're not wearing any Ravens gear. I am here in my red Atlanta Falcons shirt. They're taking on the Vikings today. Looking forward to that game. But we're not here to talk football with you.
Heck
we're here
no.
to talk about some books.
Book reviews.
So Laura, any thoughts on the start
on
of the NFL
season?
Yeah. I mean, just candid thoughts here.
Well, okay. I think the autumn winds are upon us.
The autumn wind is a pirate.
That's right.
No, Andrew, I have no thoughts about it.
I mean, is this...
I like the Jacksonville Jaguars because I'm from Jacksonville,
sure.
Florida.
Yep. But speaking of Baltimore, we're going to have on the show today Sarah Pinsker.
Woo!
Baltimore's own. I don't know. She's not from Baltimore, I don't think.
She's not.
But she lives in Baltimore.
Her book had a lot of Baltimore in it.
And
it was
her
great.
Book, A Song for a New Day, a great book. We'll be talking about that later on. So look forward to that. We talked to Sarah Pinsker. Had a great conversation. Looking forward to playing that interview for you. We all have book recommendations for you. And, of course, the YA shout-outs. And don't forget the
audio book.
But before we get to that, I wanted to give you a quick little update on the beginning of the new school year. As you know, drama teacher here, Dave Medicus. Hi, how's everybody doing today? That's right, it's me. It's
Dave Medicus.
Oh, and I didn't do this one. Welcome to
The Inside Flap.
That's right. So everybody's getting back to the swing of things. Been almost a full month now back at school. And every teacher, interesting thing, still, anytime you see them in the hallway, it's always the same thing. You know, and you know I don't like making small talk, but anytime if somebody happens to be walking down the hall, you give them a little, hey, how's it going? Exact same response from any single teacher. It's always the same. Tired. Tired, man. I'm tired. It's invariably
getting
now,
back to work.
Still getting back into the swing of things. And I think maybe just to spice things up a little bit, get a little teacher morale going, our new assistant principal. So we have these, you know, teacher meetings we have to go every week. And so for our one of our latest teacher meetings, he decided that he was going to put on what is a faculty talent show. Now, not for the students, mind you, just for the other teachers. So he sent out an email. He said, listen, we got about 30 slots available, guys. So go ahead and sign up for a time slot.
30?
How
long is this going to last? You've got to be kidding me.
He assigned all these slots, had all these time slots written out in this email, and it was like a shared Google Doc. Sent it out to the whole staff. And send it out. So he signed like 3 minutes per teacher to sign up for. And of course, he had signed up. His name is Bateman. Shout out to Bateman. Great guy. Really new assistant principal. Really fiery, animated guy. Mm-hmm. He's I guess he just finished doing some musical theater. So big song and dance guy. Not to be confused with Patrick Bateman, you know, from of course, American
or
Psycho.
Or Jason
Bateman, or you know, any of the other Batemans. He reserved the last slot for himself, and I got on the Google Doc, and someone had signed up for the slot just in front of his, so I grabbed the third to the last slot.
Okay.
I decided I was going to do a little spoken word. Little,
this is the first I'm hearing of this.
A little funny poem. Because, you know, I think my job is to bring a little humor to these teacher meetings can be so terrible.
When is this supposed to happen, though?
Well, it was going to happen at the end of the meeting. So I signed up for the third to the last slot. And then those were the only three slots that were taken. Of course, the email had just gone out. So I go back the next day to check
to see
the Google Doc, and there you see 27 open slots and still only three slots taken. Myself, the
you're kidding me.
The foreign language teacher, Nicho, and Bateman.
I don't like a lot of attention. Like I don't like. I don't even like.
Well, I was a little disappointed.
I'm a little uncomfortable, like even with birthdays and things like that.
And that's fine. And
so, like, I would never have signed up for that.
But you got to remember, here are teachers who are used to standing in front of an audience every day, and I'm a little disappointed at my fellow arts teachers. You got two. We have two music teachers.
Kim's not going to do that, though.
So hang on a second.
I'll get to that. Yeah.
Now, I don't know that most teachers would refer to their classroom as an audience. I mean, drama teacher. I mean, come on.
That's true.
Maybe they might not refer to them as
You're
such.
Right. They're not
but
shy.
They are.
They like attention.
Yes, teachers.
I've been around teachers. They love
attention.
It.
Of course. They are there, you know, in front of kids all day long.
Because technically, I wonder the definition of an audience. Because I think of an audience as people.
Captive.
that's true. Well, there's a difference between a captive
that you're unfamiliar
audience
with,
and an audience. Yeah.
Right? People that you're unfamiliar with. But because you're so intimately familiar with your students.
Right.
Is it really an audience?
Well, it is a performance. You know, it is a performance. And it's funny, that actually ties into the Sarah Pinsker book, A Song for a New Day, because it's all about live performances. And as a teacher, you are giving five, you teach in five classes, so you're giving five 55-minute long performances. Now, I know a lot of these teachers, some of you out there listening to me, your idea of a performance is to sit at your desk and check email while students are working on their desk. But drama teacher is up and on his feet all day long. We're getting his 20,000 steps all day. But let me get back to these. Let me get back to our performance, our talent show. So, a little disappointed. At the end of the day, I think there were maybe six
total staff members who signed up for a slot out of the 30 slots. We had it was a breakfast meeting, so it was like a potluck breakfast. I brought in.
I had no idea this was going on.
Blueberries was my contribution.
You brought in blueberries.
And I walk in with a blueberry, and I was greeted by a teacher who said, oh, Mr. Medic, you're so healthy. Look at you with your blueberries. I'm going to...
Little do they know. Okay. Little do they know.
We do have there is a lot of ice cream eating around here. But Kim, our teacher, Kim, who has appeared on the show, she brought in for her segment, our teacher, she brought in a octopus pot that she made.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And it's cool. And she actually made it because she had a student of hers, made an octopus pot that Kim accidentally, I think it broke while it was in the kiln.
Oh, yeah, that happens frequently.
So Kim felt really, really bad about that. So over the summer, she made an octopus pot for the student.
Yeah. I would like an octopus
pot. I know,
Kim,
right?
If you're listening.
She got in front of everybody and showed off her lovely
What is an octopus pot?
It is a octopus.
Shocker.
That is made out of pot. No, it's a ceramic.
It's a pot, right?
Was it a pot? Actually,
or is it just a ceramic octopus?
Kim, I know you're listening to this and you're screaming at me right now saying, it's not a pot, Dave. It was an octopus. I'm not sure.
Is it an object or is it an object with usefulness
as well?
It's
a ceramic octopus.
Okay. So that's all you
Whether
would say.
Whether or not it was a pot, I don't think it was a pot now that I think about it. I think when I think ceramics, I just naturally think, I hearken back to, horrible flashbacks to seventh grade and making terrible pinch pots in class. So I don't think it was a pot. It was
an octopus.
It was a cool octopus that she showed around. And I remember saying she was afraid she was going to break that one too. So she just kind of put it to the side.
Yeah.
But so Kim did her thing, and that was cool.
I could see doing something like that. If I didn't have to perform, and I could just show something I've done.
That's true, yeah. Well,
those are cool. That's actually what I was picturing.
It's not that. No, it literally was an octopus.
Okay.
Andrew showed us a pot with some
octopus
kind of
legs. But you could put a plant in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had a new staff member.
I like one of those.
I think she's an intervention teacher or something. To be honest, I'm not exactly sure what she does, but she got up and she grabbed the old acoustic guitar and she played the very timely Four Non-Blondes hit, What's Up?
Okay, so, sure.
Yeah, engaged everyone. Andrew, you know this song? I wake in the morning and I get real high and I scream at the top of my lungs, what's going on?
Oh, yeah.
That was just named by Rolling Stone as one of the worst songs of the 90s,
well,
by the way.
She's up there singing it.
I don't agree with the Rolling Stones list, but that one was.
It's a little overrated, and it's one of those songs that'll kind of get stuck in your head. And when you really listen to the lyrics, and you're like,
"It's just a one-hit,
kind of a one-hit wonder."
Yeah,
she got everybody involved in singing along. Not a bad song. No, we were all singing along to it, and then our new AP now Bateman. I think he had the real reason he set this whole thing up is just to kind of show off how talented he was.
Did he sing and dance?
He did not sing, but he brought in a bunch of pottery of his own that he made with like these fancy labels, and he had them like all his little, the guy must have gotten there like 5 a.m. He had like a tablecloth on there and all his little artwork that he created with these little labels set up.
Does he sell it?
I don't know. The guy seems like a nice guy. I'm not sure if he sells it or not.
I bet he does.
But he got up. He said,
didn't lift it up to see a price on the bottom.
No, I did not. Nice work. He did. He does nice work. But he got up and did a dance for us. He put on. He said, "Now this song is really meaningful. I want you guys to think about our students when you hear this song." And he played this song and he did this great dance during it. This really kind of impactful, kind of like angry dance. Kind of like how our students feel a lot of times. But then he said, "Now halfway through my dance, I want you to close your eyes and I just want you to listen to the words." So it was kind of weird watching him dance and he's like, "All right, now close your eyes." And I don't know if he did that because he didn't think of the choreography for the rest of the song or what, if he really wanted us to listen to the words. But we all had to sit with our eyes closed for about 2 minutes.
Teachers,
they're always asking us to close our eyes.
You teachers do weird things.
I'm telling you, man. I don't know.
That is so strange.
So he did that, I did my little funny poem, and people seem to really enjoy that. In fact, our new guidance counselor. We had two guidance counselors at the show at our school.
Good. And you guys need more. Schools
our new more. One. She was like, "Wow, that was great. I was really really enjoyed your poem. Can I get a copy of that?" And I like kind of reached into my pocket and pulled up my folded up sweaty copy that I had to refer to a couple times. And I here you go. And then I handed it to her, and she kind of looked at it, and I was like, oh, okay.
So it was a mean Joe Green moment.
She walked, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, like the old Coke commercial, let me throw my sweaty jersey at you. Yeah, I think she meant, let me email her a copy, but I didn't really think about it. I kind of felt bad. She was walking away holding it. But
that's so awkward.
There was
that's
that.
So awkward.
But the highlight for me for the talent show.
There's more.
Was our science teacher. Now, he got up to
Is
the
Is he
front.
The one that rollerblades with the skeleton? Is that the same guy?
Oh, no, that's Grant. He's one of our other psychiatrists or psychotherapists or something like that. He did do it. No, Grant did not do anything. I'm a little surprised at that.
He's got some talent.
No, this is our middle school science teacher. So he gets up to the front. Now, he's a nice guy. And by nice guy, I mean, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I don't really know him, but he seems like a nice guy. He's kind of this young white guy. He's kind of goofy in his style and appearance. He's this kind of sloppily dressed white guy. He's got this scruffy beard and he's kind of got Andrew's hair, this real unkempt hair.
Huh.
Well, this guy gets in front of us. Now, he basically spends about 10 minutes giving us a dissertation on what it means to be a B-boy. And Andrew, do you have any idea what a B-boy is? Any idea at all?
I have no clue.
All right. Well, apparently a B-boy is somebody who's immersed in hip-hop culture, which is kind of, you give me that strange look. Yeah, it's kind of odd coming from this goofy white guy. But it's he's talking about breakdancing and how much the breakdancing culture is immersed in inner-city culture. And he's talking about all this. Yeah, very strange. And then he wants us. He's got a B-boy nickname and everything. I forget
you
what his
have got
B-boy,
to be kidding
he's
me.
He's got a name and a
this
moniker.
Is straight out of AP Bio or something.
Yes, it's like all.
Does he throw
sitcom.
Down some cardboard?
Well, in retrospect, he should have.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
But what he does is he gets out.
I lived in New York City. Seen some breakdancing in the subways.
In the subways. So fantastic. Awesome. And people would gather around, and that's exactly what he did. He said, all right, I
Union
want everybody, get up out of your chairs. Y'all get up out of your chairs. Gather around, throw it up. And he's like waving his arms, gesticulating frantically.
Did he have some music?
In the air. And he gets out his tinny little Bluetooth speakers, and he pumps up the jams, and oh man, we're excited now because now we're getting up, right? And we're throwing it up, we're standing around, we're chanting, we're screaming his name.
I'd be pretty excited.
And he starts out by like walking in a circle, and he's like kind of moving his shoulders back and forth, and he's throwing his arms up in the air. And then he gets down and he kind of moving his feet around. He's got these special sneakers. And we're in the Warrior Room. It's called the Warrior Room because we're the Warriors is our nickname.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just a conference room.
This actually is more Danny McBride's Vice Principals than it is AP
That's
Bio.
True, yeah. The room is carpeted and he's getting ready to get down, right? So he's got some fancy footwork. Now his feet are gone. He's got these flashy sneakers on, and he's like moving them back and forth.
And he's down on the ground, moving his legs.
Not yet.
Oh,
it involves a lot of. It almost looks like he's running in place, but then he's going backwards and forwards and kicking his legs out to the side. But then, so he does that for a little bit, and then he gets down on the ground and he starts does a few whirls and twirls and looks like he's getting ready to do like a headstand or something, some spins on his head, but doesn't quite get there. And man, we're screaming and shouting, woo, yeah, whoa! But then all of a sudden, he gets up, music's still going, and he just starts to limp off to the side.
Oh my goodness.
And this is like 15 seconds into the routine. And we're all still clapping and shouting and screaming. and he's shaking his head. And then he does what you don't want to see, is he does the old, takes his hand and goes to his neck and does the slashing gesture like, that's it, I'm done. And he goes over to his little Bluetooth speakers and stops the music. And we're all like up here, we're at a 10 right now. And he just wanders over and then he just plops down on his chair. And stops.
Now, how old is this guy?
He must be in his mid-20s. He's a young guy.
Yeah. You know,
barely able to grow a beard, but he's got like this beard. Because
I could see somebody that's our age, like close to 50.
Right, and that's what you would think. You know? And everybody turns to our middle school science teacher, who's in his mid-40s. And you know, and they're all like, Isaac, you get up there. And he's like, hell no, last time I did that, same thing happened to me. you know, I think he's okay now, but let's just say later on that afternoon when I saw this science teacher, he was in a wheelchair. He was rolling down the hallway in the wheelchair from the nurse's office.
What?
Yeah. So you know,
all I can say is, as a drama teacher, next year you should try and spoof that.
All right, that's a good idea. Yeah. That's a good idea. I'm gonna.
You need to start writing this stuff down. I guess you're telling it.
I'm putting it out there ether. So that was the highlight of the meeting. We also had our middle school art teacher. Now you guys know that I got in trouble. At a meeting for saying
yes,
we did a little sketch.
Which time did you get in trouble?
So this is the one where I assigned the word bitch to a gender.
Your defense, someone had called you a bitch during some fun, friendly improv.
That they called me up to because everyone wants the drama teacher to act it out. So Dave, get up and do this sketch. Show what it's like to be a bad teacher in this role play.
Right.
So I'm playing the part of a bad teacher.
And you assigned a gender.
And the woman
to the
who's
word
playing
bitch.
The student says, don't be such a bitch. And I said, hey, don't call me a, you can't call me a bitch. I'm a man. As a joke or whatever. And yes, they went to my assistant principal and complained about me. Now, that happened. So we had at this quote unquote talent show, the one of the acts was our middle school art teacher. And she says, listen, y'all, I'm real excited. I'm going to do for you a live drawing. Now, we've been to Red Rocks, and we got to see, actually...
Oh, yeah, Scramble Campbell.
Scramble Campbell, your cousin Jenny Ray's friend,
actually,
who at Red Rocks would do beautiful paintings, you know, while the concert is going on. Just great,
awesome,
colorful...
Super fun, real hippy-dippy.
Yeah, and he sells his stuff all summer long at Red Rocks. You can buy his stuff.
Expensive.
Check him out, Scramble Campbell. Yep, you can find his website. Great guy. We got to meet him and talk to him.
Yeah.
Really cool. Real nice guy. Great painting. Hippy dippy for sure.
Yeah.
But cool. So she says, I'm going to do a live drawing for you guys. So she pulls the whiteboard up to the front and we're getting excited. She says, now I want you guys to pick the music. So she has us write down the names of different songs.
What did you write down?
And we put them in, I wrote nothing.
Okay.
I sat there. wrote nothing. I was going to write The Eye of the Tiger, actually, is what I was going to. I was like, no, too sticky. Don't
you
do that.
You should have written like a Helen Reddy song or something.
I am woman. Sure.
Yes.
So everybody puts a song title and throw it in a hat. And she pulls out the song and she goes, oh, this is perfect. And she's smiling. She's a new teacher, right? New art teacher.
A lot of new teachers.
She's going to be the middle school art teacher.
Okay.
So she starts smiling. She says, oh, I love this. Guys, this is Wu-Tang Clan with Bring the Ruckus.
Now,
I'm thinking, okay, all right. And so she pulls it up.
Is there an E after that song?
Hold on. Don't read ahead. Do not read ahead.
I know Wu-Tang. They are not safe for work.
I would like to play the song for you guys. However, I don't have time to bleep out all the explicit lyrics. So instead, what I'm going to do for you is I'm just going to read you some of the lyrics. Okay, the song starts with the chorus. Here's the chorus.
Oh, no.
I'm going to censor myself. Bring the mother effing ruckus. Bring the mother effing ruckus. Bring the mother. Bring the mother effing ruckus. Bring the mother effing ruckus.
Okay.
So it's a pretty mundane beginning to the song.
Okay. All right. So far, I'm like, all right, I guess.
This is blasting. Now it's not the word, you know, it's saying, the actual word. Wow. So they're not saying effing, right? They're saying the actual F
and no
word.
One's uncomfortable by this.
People are smiling. What? They're high-fiving. She's up with the whiteboard. She's got a black dry erase marker. And the first thing she does...
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, what?
Is she white?
She's white, okay. Yes, she's white. She takes the marker, and the first thing she does is she draws a big line all the way around the perimeter of the whiteboard.
Okay.
And as the song is going on, she's kind of just drawing a big line all the way around the board and just drawing a line around the... and
creating a frame?
Doing a couple circles, yeah.
So let me guess. After listening to this song, she drew a nice, big, happy peace symbol.
She did not. She was drawing eyes. So she was drawing big cartoon eyes all over the whiteboard. Also eyes that she had tattoos of all over her arm. So It's her thing. Here's some other lyrics. Quote... I rip it hardcore like porno flick bitches.
What?
I roll with groups of ghetto bastards with biscuits. This is blasting all throughout as she's drawing her eyes. A few other lyrics by this nasty ass N-word, the real N-word.
Yeah, sure.
With my N-word.
This is ridiculous.
Charged up like a bull and got pulled like a trigger. So bad stabbing up the pad with the vocab crab.
No.
Scream on your ass like your dad. Bring it on.
No.
Bring the ruckus. Bring the mother effing ruckus.
No.
Bring the
ruckus.
So, Dave, my question for you
is... No.
Do you want to assign a gender to the word bastard?
In my head, I was. I couldn't believe it. How does she get away with that? And I can't say, don't call me a bitch, I'm a man. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. So that happened. Now, a little caveat to this story is that I just found out from Kim on Friday, this middle school art teacher.
Yeah.
She put in her 2 weeks notice.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, according to Kim, they did not tell her she was going to teach middle school when they hired her.
What'd she think she was teaching?
High school. So they hired her, and then all of a sudden she found herself teaching middle school.
Middle school's tough.
And
middle school's real tough.
And one final little feather on the cap of this story is that I went down to the counselor's office, the guidance counselor's office, to talk to LaShawn. Now, we had, you know, like I told you, the new counselor, you know, we had a new one. But anyway, I had to go talk to our older counselor, LaShawn, who'd been there for some time, about a student.
Hang on one second.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang is on tour right now.
Oh, perfect. Well, you know, the really funny thing is that when I looked up that song on Apple Music.
Yeah.
And then...
It's a very famous song.
It is a famous song, yeah. I pull up our, what do you call it? Not our Apple TV, but the, what's
Apple
the
Music.
Other? No. I did that, but on our TV, we have, not Bluetooth, Blu-ray, what do we got? Hulu! No, not Hulu.
Roku?
What's the Roku.
Okay.
So when I pull up our Roku, the same day I looked up that song to get the lyrics on Apple Music.
Yeah.
You know, splashed on the title screen is a huge Wu-Tang documentary.
Yeah, I know. So, it's huge. So, I'm looking at it right now.
Right. So everybody go check that out.
There's a lot of famous men in that.
Yeah,
in
yeah. Oh, no. Very. It's a very popular
hip-hop.
They are
not.
And I like the song. Don't get me wrong. I really like the song. Yeah. It's got
a, I am too.
I actually really like the song. I mean, I was.
Too white, I think.
Well. Listen,
and I'm too.
As my buddy, the science
female.
Teacher, will tell you, hip hop is a culture, it's a way of life.
I'm too female for it.
You're not
hip hop. Some of the male hip hop,
yeah,
right. I find very aggressive towards women.
I don't understand what you're saying. I just read you some beautiful lyrics. I rip it hardcore like porno flick bitches. What do you? I don't know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I know.
Dave, if you're interested,
sure, I am interested.
There's a book called The Wu-Tang Manual.
Oh, perfect. Now, I'm going to gift that to our teacher as a farewell present.
It is the RZA's first written introduction to
the
philosophy.
No, it's RZA, not RZA. RZA.
RZA. First written introduction to the philosophy and history of the hip-hop Hip Hop's Original Dynasty, Lovely. The Wu-Tang Clan.
Okay.
So maybe you should read that and we should review it on the show.
Oh, we should review that on the show.
That's got to be reviewed on the show.
I'm going to challenge you that, Andrew. So you got to learn how to pronounce Riz's name.
But anyway, yeah. So I walked into the guidance counselor's office and I was talking to LaShawn, blah, 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 blah. I turn around to walk out. Now, in this office, there are two desks, one for LaShawn and one for the other counselor. And as I'm walking out, I notice the other guidance counselor's desk is empty.
Uh-oh.
I turn to LaShawn. I'm like, LaShawn, what happened? What happened to our... She's like, oh, yeah, she quit.
Oh, my goodness.
What?
LaShawn's what is the culture here?
I don't know. LaShawn's like, yeah, she put in her 2 weeks' notice, and then the next day cleaned out her desk and never came back.
You are kidding me.
I'm like, damn.
That seems like it must be a very toxic work environment if they're clearing out like that.
It's not. It's not. It's a tough school to teach at. You know.
Yeah, but you kind of know that going into it, don't you? Yeah.
But it's also the question, if she got another teaching gig somewhere else, it may be they needed her to start immediately.
That's true.
That's true. But but here's the thing. So I look over her desk and I notice there is a piece of paper on the desk and it looks a little familiar. I go over and dead center of her desk is, what do you think? Yes, it is my poem.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Now is it folded up or was it?
No, it was opened. It was open. No. But I could see the folds in it. So I was like,
why have to ask?
It's so hilarious.
What was your poem about?
It was a funny poem about get ready for the kids are coming, get ready for the kids, you know, prepare yourself, you know. And then I kind of like, you know, did a little funny shtick about the different teachers and stuff like that. But yeah, there you go. She left it. I don't know if that was a little going away present. I don't know if it's like, this is what I think of this place. I have no idea what to make out of that.
Here's what I picture.
Yeah.
I picture when she's packing up her stuff, she found it and she's like, no, that stays here.
Why wouldn't she just throw it away?
Maybe she felt bad about it.
Maybe. I don't
Maybe
know.
It was part of why she was leaving.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. But
wow.
But hopefully that won't be the last talent show. I'll let you guys know, you know, for any future teacher talent shows.
I like it.
All right, anyway, Laura, how was your week this week?
Oh, my week's been great.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I've been thinking about and working on probably for at least a year now, maybe more, is just being in the moment. I don't know if it's what you would call mindfulness, but more just being...
Well, that's part of B-boy culture, is being in the moment.
Is that?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, I've been B-boying it up like this past year or so, and just like trying to, anywhere I am, just, you know, like think about what's going on at that time.
Being mindful. Yeah, I think that's
a
good
way to live. And I got to say, after doing it for so long, it's become a habit. Mm-hmm. But it's become a habit in a way that starts to annoy me. Because I get so sick of being mindful. I'm so tired
of being
mindful.
So now you're mindful of being mindful.
It's almost like if you're on a diet and you're just so sick of eating celery or whatever it is, and you just want to veg out.
That's right, yeah.
And that's what I feel like. I'm at that point in my mindfulness sick of being mindful.
So now I know why we started watching Big Brother this season. That explains a lot, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's a weird thing.
No,
I don't
it makes
know.
Sense. It
Does
makes,
it?
You can only be too self-aware, and sometimes you need to...
I'm so sick of it.
Step out of yourself sometimes,
I guess. Do you guys... Here's the thing, though. I think that this is a woman thing, because I feel like a lot of women's articles are about being mindful, being present. And I wonder if men ever... are annoyed with themselves for being mindful.
I never give myself.
Do you ever think about that, you two?
I don't never give myself the present of being present.
This is put upon by me. I realize this.
I think so. Andrew, what about you?
So I consider myself considerate, you know, and maybe I've learned to be considerate. This isn't something that was obvious to me being raised by a dad, you know, a dad who really doesn't care about anybody else.
Yeah.
But I actually get criticized by my wife for being mindful.
Really?
Yeah.
How has that happened, though?
I won't go into those details. But yeah.
Wow. Huh.
Well, I'm just self-critical at the time. Like even last night, I was taking a walk. So you're
not being mindful, then you're being critical, because there would be a difference.
I'm mostly just feeling annoyed that I'm in the moment, and I'm consciously thinking about being in the moment.
Okay.
Like last night, I'm on a walk, and we had a beautiful sky here because there was a storm coming in.
Yeah.
And just the light was gorgeous. It was beautiful. There's all different cultures and people and all kinds of things going on at the park. And I was like, wow, I need to take a mental note of what's going on here and just love being in this moment. And I'm like, why? Why do I have to do that?
Yeah.
Just want to listen to my book on tape and shut all this out.
So, I mean, I've done this throughout my life, but I can put myself back to middle school where I'm walking the half mile to middle school on Kent Island.
Yeah, another Kent Island reference.
Walking past the fields of corn and soybeans. Mm-hmm. You know, just walking along the road, looking out there. But, you know, like every once in a while, I will do that and I will kind of store that memory.
And store it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There, I guess there just comes a point for me. I think I'm a big daydreamer. And because I'm such a daydreamer and I've had a habit of daydreaming my entire life, that when I'm forcing myself to step away from wherever my brain is going and just think of in the present, it's affecting me a little bit. Yeah.
So you want to be in the moment, but you got to take yourself out of the moment to be in that moment.
Yeah.
And it would drive yourself crazy.
It's
a cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to.
Yes.
You got to let go in order to let go.
That's so weird.
I don't know how the hell you get out of that.
I don't know.
That's terrible. You may start running. That's what you got to do. Start running. That'll take you out of it in a hurry, because then all you can think about is your damn heart rate.
I have been trying to run.
And your breath.
We really need to get that psychologist on the show.
Yeah, we talked about it last week.
So how are you, Andrew?
Definitely. Andrew, how's your week going?
So I guess it's a good week, but this is one of those weeks where I've been a little healthier, exercising and stuff like that.
Okay.
But this last week
are you sick of it?
Well, no, I like exercising.
That's good.
Where I was up at like 5 in the morning every day because I had to get to work or do this or do that, and then I'm busy until 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
Oof.
So, you know, I completely fall off the wagon this week in terms of exercising.
Yeah.
You know? So the weekend comes and I'm basically getting back on the wagon again.
Yeah.
So I got two little stories for you. So the one is our dog Rex, who's a 100-and-some-pound golden retriever, and he's been on a diet.
He's been on a diet. I do know this.
And one of the challenges with a 5, 8, and a 10-year-old at home,
he eats their stuff
a lot more than he should. Mm-hmm. Right? So we have to keep
feeding. Oh, the kids are constantly feeding him.
Well, not feeding
him.
No,
they leave food.
If you leave food for five seconds, the dogs, he is inhaling it.
Kids don't think about it.
When he gets that opportunity, I mean, it's not timidly going up to a plate of food or whatever. I mean, literally,
he's choking it down.
He will inhale whatever's on that plate, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you don't catch him on the way to that food, it's over.
It's over.
It's over.
It's over, Johnny.
So, you know, and Rex is on prescription dog food now, which you can only buy at the vet, right? And we've been making progress. So,
poor Rex.
$90 a bag. I mean, this stuff is not cheap.
Yeah. Poor Andrew.
And you can't buy it online. I mean, we've looked. So anyways. So last night, basically Mary-Kate's eating some chocolate chip buckwheat pancakes covered in syrup.
Okay. Oh, breakfast for dinner. I love breakfast
for dinner.
We had that the other week.
So Katie and I are in the kitchen. Mary-Kate steps away from the table. Seconds later, there's Rex inhaling an entire stack of buckwheat chocolate chip pancakes. And so,
No, senor!
So I take him outside. I discipline him, which is basically saying,
discipline.
Bad dog.
You look at me, young
bad
man.
Bad dog.
Do you know what you've done?
Yeah. You know, and who knows what a dog. But anyways, he starts going into...
Dad's getting loud with me. He must really like me.
So he starts going into convulsions.
Oh, no.
You are kidding
me. No. So he starts going into convulsions, and he lets up a little bit. But he was not right for the rest of the evening. So I actually...
Oh, no.
That night, I stayed outside with him outside for like an hour. Now, keep in mind, I did put the gas fireplace on. I was sitting back there listening to an audiobook, but I was spending time with the dog, and we had the boys there making sure he would drink water and petting him and stuff like that too. And so he seemed to be doing better.
Wow.
But you know, he was still having like these mild convulsions. So we were a little concerned, but you know, he seems to be back to normal this morning. Took him on a walk. Everything's good. But we had a little, you know,
a moment of panic. I would assume when you woke up this morning or the next morning, you were circling the house just looking for where the mess, the result of the chocolate chip cookies.
You think it was
the
chocolate?
I would have been.
the chocolate that was
the immense amount of sugar,
the maple syrup.
Yeah, maple syrup has 30 grams of sugar in it.
I was looking to see if there's something with the buckwheat
per serving
that basically could have caused it. Now, another incident last night is we went over to a neighbor's house that had a little fire and we were doing s'mores at the cul-de-sac.
Nice. Mm.
And so one of the other neighbors who has two young kids,
we barely wave at our neighbors.
He was trying a new...
We get together, have a few laughs.
Right, we had a few laughs last night. So he was trying out a new babysitter. Mm. And so basically, and this is a single dad who must have had a date.
In your neighborhood?
Hold on. You can't just say... Hang on a second. When you say trying out a new
baby... we'll get there.
A single dad trying out a new babysitter.
So basically...
Also, your neighborhood's very suburban, like family.
Yeah, it is.
I can't picture a single guy living there.
Hello, Cindy. Come on over. I don't have any kids, but...
and I won't go into you. So anyway. So basically, the babysitter gets there. She's late. And so he takes off, leaves this new babysitter with the kids and stuff like that. And we're... like all gathered outside.
Uh-huh.
So apparently one of the reasons the babysitter was late is because she had to sober up enough in order to be able to make the drive.
To babysitting. How old is she?
She's in her late 20s.
This is like Fernando. You're drunken arborist.
And so
what is going on over there?
Oh my goodness.
And so this babysitter was basically dropping F bombs. Everything else. And so and now she was also very handsy.
Whoa.
Now, in what respect?
Whoa.
Yeah, I won't go into too many details, but let's just say
give me a little bit of detail.
Let's just say she was equal opportunity handsy. Men, women, it didn't matter. She had her hands all over anybody that she could get close to.
And I am so confused by this.
And the personal space, it's just like...
Was she stumbling around, staggering around?
I don't know if she did sober up for that.
Like I said, I really...
Was she drinking when she got there?
We didn't see her drinking when she got there. Now,
was she slurring? How do you know she was drinking?
Well, like I said, she said it. Yeah, she said something. And so then
she announced it.
And at one point,
that's what you want. That's always a sign of a good part. Hey, where are the kids? I've been drinking. Where are the kids?
I think if I were the... Did he know? Did he hear this?
You know, again, it's this single dad who's probably got a date. He's late for the date. Now, and when you are a single parent and you don't have immediate family around to watch your kids and stuff like that, I mean, it is a struggle.
Yeah. I mean, it's a struggle anyway just to find somebody.
And his kids are old enough to take care of themselves. He really just needs an adult there if something happens.
How old are his kids?
Probably something like, I would say, like, you know, fourth and, you know, something like third and fifth grade.
So they're not infants.
So not infants.
No.
All right.
Yeah. But at one point, too, she disappears off into the bushes.
Oh, no.
And she's videotaping some other let's say older neighbors who apparently are having some sort of a weird thing in their backyard.
What?
And she comes back, you know, and
what is
and,
she breaking out a Super 8
what were your
camcorder?
Other what were they doing in their backyard that was so
I have
weird?
I have no idea.
But she thought it was weird.
Yeah, she thought it was weird. And apparently they were some strange neighbors. So anyways,
look at this.
So a nice
what's going on in
a nice quiet evening in the suburban.
Did you let her just go off with the kids?
With my kids? No,
with your friends' kids, with your neighbor's kids.
Hey, you know what can I say?
Not your problem.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think there was a safety. It's not like she was putting them in the car and driving them around.
All right.
Wow, where'd he get that babysitter?
Did you talk to him after this happened?
She was previously the art teacher at Dave's middle school.
But I guarantee that, and this isn't our cul-de-sac, it's one of the cul-de-sacs, and so I guarantee you the neighbors that live directly next to him, I guarantee you they had a conversation because we had also discussed, it's like, yep, I would definitely not, I would not bring her back.
So he might not be calling her back to babysit, but maybe he might be calling her back for a date. Is that what you're saying?
She sounds like a hot mess.
A little handsy.
Yeah.
All right, well, speaking of hot messes, I'd like to play for you now the interview that Laura and I did with Sarah Pinsker. She was
a hot mess during the interview?
Yes, I was a complete hot mess. No,
Dave and I did talk over each other a couple times.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward. It was the first time we did an interview where all three of us were in three different locations.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was at school. You were here in the basement studios in Littleton.
No, I was upstairs.
Oh, you were. That's right. You were upstairs in Littleton.
Yeah.
Sarah, of course, was in Baltimore. Anyway, in any case, it was great to talk to her. Sarah is a Nebula Award winner for her novelette, Our Lady of the Open Road. Her first story collection is called Sooner or Later, Everything Falls into the Sea, was published in just this year, in March of 2019.
Everything except Wyoming.
That's right. And her first novel is called A Song for a New Day. And we're going to talk to her, or we did talk to her about that and many other things. So give it a listen. Here is our chat with Sarah Pinsker.
Steer, Henry Steer.
I love the Baltimore references you put in your book. The Bromo Tower, the Bromo Seltzer Tower reference, the Erebor references, the Stoops. Of course, you got to get the Stoops in there. Do you do a Baltimore accent? You know, feel free to do the interview with a Baltimore accent if you'd like to.
I don't have one, I don't think. Every once in a while, there's a word that sneaks in, and then I'm kind of shocked myself.
Well, how do you say you get a glass of water or a glass of water? Yeah.
I say water, but that was the one I was going to use as an example.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That and the ambulance. which I don't say, but I actually hear one right now.
Is the ambulance going down the road there, hon, or is it going down the ocean? I don't know.
Yeah, you go down the ocean.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it took me years after we moved out here to get that, to drop the water out of my vocab and say water.
Yeah.
So, Sarah, your new book is called A Song for a New Day, and it's set about 15 minutes in the future, basically, when large public gatherings are banned, which is terrible news for musicians and honestly, music lovers also everywhere. And I love the book. I love the character of Luce Cannon, which is a great name.
Great name, Luce Cannon. Yes.
Her career was just about to take off when the ban goes into effect. And I found it to be both a great concept and also sadly plausible. And I was wondering what inspired you to write this book?
So I wrote a story right before that came out a couple of years ago called Our Lady of the Open Road, which is also about Luce Cannon.
Yes.
Kind of that was what inspired it, but what inspired that was just all of my fears. You can just cram them all in there, all of my fears as a musician and as someone watching my friends try to make a living at it. And just seeing the two things. One is how hard it is as you compete with streaming,
right.
just looking for the places where you can still make enough to continue if people aren't going to, buy music directly from you, and where do you make the money in order to continue on? But then also the question of will people come out and it gets harder and harder. There's more things competing for your time and the idea of streaming or not just like binge watching whatever show it is that you're in the middle of that you just are dying to get to the end of, it's a Tuesday night and you really want to go see that band, your friend's band and support them, but it's raining and you're halfway through and you could totally get through it tonight. You could just watch the rest of that show and the show would be there the next night. But,
exactly. Yeah.
But it's really hard sometimes to drag yourself out. So I kind of, I guess it's partly a chastisement of myself for that, because I'm as guilty of it as anyone. I don't go to every show that I'd like to go to, but I think I was just thinking about the most extreme example I could think of how to carry all those fears down the road and what would happen if people were willing to accept compromises on freedom in the name of safety.
Right. Yeah. And you definitely did take it to an extreme in this book for sure.
Like out here in Colorado last spring, they shut down school for a day because of some fears.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In Maryland a long time ago, there was that shooter. I don't know if you remember that.
I sure do.
People were cowering behind their cars, trying to get gas and, it is a little real. Yeah.
Right. And actually, You mentioned that, and it just struck me that I hadn't been thinking about that, but at the time that was happening, I was playing music full time, and I actually got a couple of shows that I ended up playing because other bands backed out.
Oh wow!
There's a great venue outside of DC called Jam and Java.
Yeah, sure, of course, yeah, and, absolutely, yep.
And I played a couple of great opening gigs there during that time because bands canceled because they were afraid to travel down there, and I was like, well, I mean, the possibility is there, but also I'm just gonna make a run from my car and hope for the best, and I'm gonna play this gig because I want to play it.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, that kind of gave me chills hearing you say that because I was like, oh man, that's kind of close. Yeah.
So there's this corporate entity in this book that's really just focused on getting musicians to play in this alternate virtual reality universe. And I was wondering, so if you go back to the old MTV question, if video killed the radio star, Sarah Pinsker, do you think holograms will kill the live stage act star?
Well, I'm not in the business of prophecy, so I would like to think not, but I do. I mean that technology is out there,
right?
It's still pretty rudimentary, but like, I think people will pay to go see, you know, like David Bowie, like mm-hmm. play a show. You know, I mean, I would go see David Bowie play a show.
You imagine seeing Prince and Michael Jackson do a duet? Who wouldn't want to go out and see that? For goodness' sake.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, yeah, absolutely. Owning up to it, I would go to that show. And then would I? So my dollars are going to that. And then would I have the money to go see the band that's playing, you know, 10 minutes from me for $10 the next night? I don't know if I would. Yeah. So it's easy, you know, like these are all situations if I put myself in. I don't know that I come out looking very good, but I like to think I would do both. But
yeah.
Do you think you would do it if you got the offer from Facebook?
No, I don't think I would, but I don't think they would take me.
I think
I would be one of the people that they would, you know, trade out. Like there's a lot of stuff about about image in there.
Yeah,
too.
A certain look they're looking for, right? Yeah.
And major label stuff there where I think that, I love what I do, but I don't think I belong on the Grammy stage. I think and I believe in my songwriting 100%. There's a star power thing that I don't think that I have, and that I think some people do. And so I love performing, but I don't, you know, I had fun creating performers who were better than me for this book. And I don't mean that as any knock against myself. Like I believe in my songwriting, but
I know, you know
there's a second layer of image that image and performance style. Like you have to, you know, make yourself larger than life in a way that I don't that's intriguing to me, and that I don't know that I've never maybe tapped into. I don't know,
David.
Maybe
I
haven't. But
we just mentioned David Bowie and Prince. I mean, those are two prime examples. And
yeah.
I was curious, what type of what type of music did you listen to while writing this book?
I have trouble listening to music while I write. and some people don't. Like I have a friend who I write with all the time who listens to one song on repeat while he drafts, and I can't do that.
That's a little crazy.
Yeah,
there are a few people who do that. He's not alone, but it confuses people in coffee shops sometimes if he's listening too loud. So in terms of what I was listening to, like when I wasn't, it's a lot of the women who were pioneers in punk, a lot of Riot Girl stuff, and then a bunch of local bands. I tend to think of punk and folk as sort of similar in more ways than people think of, especially when it comes to live music, like the sort of DIY ethic of the venues and stuff. So just a lot of folk and punk and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
If you want, I can name specifics. I'm being vague, but
that's all right. That's okay.
Okay. Yeah, I like that you like in folk. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, because most people definitely would not put those two together, but I can see, you know, from a performance standpoint, they might be closer than you would think.
Yeah,
and lyrically too. I mean, in terms of what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Now, you have a great concept in this book where a guy has a tattoo of a keyboard on his arm, and underneath this tattoo, he's got these trigger implants where if you touch them, they send a signal to a keyboard that's plugged into an amp, which then plays the note. Now, this is a great idea.
This gave me the
Lars a little freaked out about that. I feel like Bobby McFerrin would be drooling over something like this. Let's face it. Now, is this something you would you ever get that done if that technology was available?
I'll bet the guitarist in my band would totally do that. I mean, it feels totally like I think he would be the first person to try to figure out how to make it happen also. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a little more about that technology and took it a little further in a short story that's connected to the novel.
Oh, cool. What's the name of that? What's the name of that one?
It's called A Song Transmuted.
Oh, that's a good title. Yeah, I like that.
It's in a couple of anthologies. There's one actually you might be interested in that's coming out next month. That took everything else in there is an original, and they took this one reprint of mine because it fit the topic perfectly. But it's called A Punk Rock Future is the name of the book.
Okay, cool. That sounds great.
It's an anthology coming out next month. Yeah, it's going to be good stuff. So it's in there, but. Yeah, so I think I wouldn't be the first one to run out and get it because I tend to lag behind on new technologies. But the idea of being your own instrument is absolutely compelling.
It really is.
I can see how it would work. And if you read that other story, you can see that his version is actually not the extreme that it can be taken to an even further extreme.
Right.
That's what
I'll say. Yeah, for sure. Now you also, speaking of names, you did have a lot of fun. It seems to me you had a lot of fun creating some fake band names in the book. Now, my personal favorite was the Coffee Cake Experience. Was that enjoyable? And did you have a favorite fake name? Did you like sit? I picture like you sitting around with your friends just tossing out like these weird names.
I collect terrible band names. Like you know, if you're hanging around and like anytime someone says, oh, that would be a good band name. And sometimes it's, oh, that would be an awful band name. So I try to collect both.
Yeah.
There are a couple in there that the people who said them probably don't even know they said them. I think there's a band, I think they were in the story, not in the novel, called the Magnificent Beefeaters.
That's a good
that, one. That was taken for, like, someone said it cause they were looking at one of the, you know, the guards outside the palace in London. And he said, like, those are some Magnificent Beefeaters. I'm like, that's totally a band name. I think it might have actually been John Scalzi who said it. I stole it right out from under him. So,
well, you steal from the best, I say.
Yeah.
Now, your book starts with a band that has just trashed a hotel room. Is this something that you have ever done? Be honest. Come on now.
Not personally, no. I'm kind of... lawful good, but
if given the opportunity, would you go about trashing
given
it?
The opportunity. So the thing about me is I harbor a lot of guilt, so I would feel too guilty about the the people who would have to clean up.
Yeah, the
me.
People who have to clean it up for sure. Yeah,
I was touring with a band that did get bored one night and they really wanted to trash the room, but they were also really nice guys, and so they were kind of getting drunk and they were watching John Waters movies on TV, and they were trying to come up with something they could do that would like fall within the bounds both of like something they could do that would also not get them in trouble, that would also not get anyone else in too much trouble. And I think what they did in the end was like they filled they filled the dresser completely with beer bottles, and then they might have turned it on end, but it was nothing that, you know, like, there was no actual damage. The bottles were empty. It would be like some work, but it was really minor, but they really wanted to do something.
Right,
you know?
Right, right. Well, you got to itch, you got to scratch it somehow. And that seems like a pretty lame way to do it. But you got to feel for the, you could always come back the next day dressed in a maid's outfit and clean it up yourself. So I guess would be.
Right. Well, and I think the really funny thing was that, like, you always think, and then we'll be gone, so there's no repercussion. But I actually think, if I remember correctly, we had to pass through that town again, like, 2 weeks later. And so, like, we ended up staying in the same hotel again.
Oh,
so,
okay, yeah.
You know, it was good that, they didn't follow their worst instinct.
And so you guys, you guys are true Baltimoreans, sitting around watching a John Waters movie.
Yeah.
Which
it's
movie?
A funny detail to remember. That was a while ago. Yeah. But yeah, I do think John Waters movies were on TV that night. It was some kind of marathon, though we were far, far, far from home.
But. Well, you got to love John Waters for sure.
Yeah.
I was wondering, were you interested in music and writing when you were growing up? Was there the pull of music stronger maybe as a young person than writing fiction, or was it both?
As a kid, they were both really strong. And so in high school, I was, I was doing open mics and playing out and stuff. And I was also running the high school literary magazine. So, and I was submitting stories when I was 13 or 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm glad they didn't get published, but I mean, the point is like getting them out there and like following, I would write away for the guidelines and everything. But, I think, in my 20s, music took over completely. Like, I put aside fiction entirely for all of my 20s, and then started coming back to it just because I found there were these other stories I wanted to tell that I eventually came back to and needed a different palette.
And how do you know, like, if you have a story idea, how do you know what is good for a song and what would be good for a story? So you say you came back to it where you had these ideas and you were just like, well, what makes you think this can't be a song. This has to be a story. You know what I mean?
I've gotten better over the years. I think the more you write, the more sense you have for what a particular idea wants to be. And if it's, if it can be distilled down to three verses and a chorus, then it's probably not a novel. right. I mean, and I say that jokingly, but also it's true. Like there's some in between areas that might be one or the other. Like, and that was where when I started writing music and it took over, part of that was, but I can distill this story to a song. So why would I write it longer?
Yeah.
And then when I started, but it's more when you get more complex ideas, things that need to like bring in more than one storyline, like that kind of thing. Then you start saying, I need more space for this. And you start looking at the longer formats. So I guess it's just a question of which story and who gets to tell it and how much. Like the cool thing about a song is you can kind of declare a lot right at the beginning. You can say, I am a courier in the first line, the way Richard Schindel does. And so then you don't have to waste time like right. explaining the character. Or if you think about like a Springsteen song where he kind of like gets you right into who it is you're talking about. But you need a little more room to unpack things for fiction.
Sure. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, but the cool thing is going the other way as you get longer again, bringing some of the tools from songwriting to fiction, I think has been really beneficial to me, just in terms of being really careful about word choice, about the rhythm of sentences and the rhythm of paragraphs and just flow. I think there's a lot that I learned that was very valuable that I could apply to fiction from music.
That's fascinating that you, so it's like the same skill set, but it's still slightly different, and that you can use that, the songwriting skills, for, and this is your first novel, right?
Yeah.
I wonder. I guess I haven't really thought about musicians turned fiction writers. I know David Berman, who recently passed, was a beautiful poet. His poetry really moved me. But that seems very similar to me to writing lyrics. Have you tried poetry at all?
I haven't. I've always been kind of intimidated by poetry. I think there was a bad experience with a teacher who made me think.
Oh, there's damn teachers. Every time it's the teachers that'll get you.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, like, I think you have to have a lot of confidence to be a poet. You have to say, this is where this line break is because this is where this line break is. And you know the reasons why. And it has to withstand people saying, why was the line break there? And that seems like a lot of scrutiny to me.
Yeah.
So you posed this question on Twitter yesterday. I think it was yesterday. And I wanted to get your answer to this because I didn't see. I don't know. You might. Why is it? It's not that much. You put a lot of.
I've been asking a lot of questions.
You have been.
Without my answer.
The funny thing is, like, you had asked that hotel trash question, but I had already, when I read it in the book, I had set it aside to ask you myself, and I saw you had asked it, so I wasn't stealing from you. But anyway, the question that you asked that I was curious to ask to you was, you said, if you could have one song play to announce you in a room. So, like, when I go into the classroom, of course, I always have Green Day's American Idiot playing, and I walk into the classroom.
Well, he doesn't.
Yeah. Sorry. No, but like a baseball player walking up to home plate or what have you. So what song would you have? What is your walking into your, to give a book reading or to what song? What is your song?
Right. You have totally trapped me here in my own question.
Oh, come on. Now you asked the question, so don't put this back on me. No.
Okay. So my instant answer may question it later. the first song that I put on, I asked another question, which was about hopeful songs. What's your favorite hopeful song? The two that I put were Ruthie Foster's Joy Comes Back or Patty Griffin's No Bad News. And those are both songs that I love, and I would happily walk into a room either to Joy Comes Back or No Bad News.
All right, sounds good. And so if those songs were not playing, what if we were playing Hungry Like the Wolf by Duran Duran? Would you turn on your heel and stomp right out of there or what?
No, I'll still walk in.
Okay. what song playing would make you turn your heel and walk out of there? Can we say that? Can we ask you that question?
That 70s...
It's Raining Men.
Loving you, the Minnie Riperton one. There's a high note that she hits she hits it perfectly well, but it hurts me. It's a note that just isn't compatible with my ears.
Wow, that's rough. Well, maybe only dogs can hear that one, then, huh?
Yeah, it might be. I was playing a Portishead song yesterday that my dog looked at me. It was one of someone else's suggestion of his walk-in music, and I pressed play on it, and my dog gave me this look like, what have you done? So,
really, what kind of dog do you have?
He's a rat terrier. We just got him a couple months ago.
Very nice.
Shelter, and I had never even heard of one, and I was always kind of biased against terriers because I got bitten by one as a kid. This is the sweetest dog I've ever met. He's a lovely thing as long as there's no squirrel in front of him. Also, he has a nemesis, which is the Yorkie next door. You'll notice you haven't heard a single peep from a dog this whole time. He doesn't bark at people walking by. He doesn't bark at bicycles or anything. And we're three stories up right now. But he has this radar for this little Yorkie that he has to sound the alarm if that dog steps out of his.
As he should.
All right. Well, Sarah Pinsker, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. The Inside Flap. All right, that was our chat with Sarah Pinsker.
Super enjoyable.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to her. It's always good to talk to somebody from Baltimore.
You know what's kind of weird?
What?
It's weird to talk to somebody about music and books.
Yeah, it is, because there are not too many musicians who are also novelists.
No, I know Ethan Hawke. No, he's an actor novelist.
He's an actor novelist.
Yeah, that's different. I feel like
Tom Waits should have written a book. If he didn't,
I
don't think he has. And then, of course, you have many authors who are in bands, like Stephen King.
That's true. It does go that way. It does not seem to go the other way.
But I feel like that's just authors living out their dreams of being a rock star,
Yeah, and I mean, everyone, though, goes that way. Sure. Everyone wants to be a musician, I would say.
Especially actors.
Because that goes for actors and everyday
and
people,
writers,
too.
Everyday people, yeah.
Yeah. We don't all think we can be writers. I guess maybe that's what it is.
Rock songs, everyday people. But here you have Sarah Pinsker.
Who's both. Was a musician and then a writer, really.
And speaking of her music, stick around at the end of the show. We're going to play her song, Too Many Questions, from the album Wingspan. We'll play that one for
you. She's got a great voice.
She really does. So
I also like the way she plays guitar.
Yep. And her new book is called A Song for a New Day. Now, I love this book. I found it fascinating.
I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, this is a book. Anybody who's ever been to a live musical performance, anyone who's ever been to a concert, who could appreciate a good show, this book is for you.
There is something about live music, though.
Really? And this book is just kind of a love letter to
there's something
live
there
performances.
That energy that is unlike anything else, really.
Anyone who's ever been to a show can do. I would say, actually,
not every show, but some shows.
Anyone who's ever been to a live musical performance and enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Not like somebody, if you've had a great aunt drag you to a Kenny G concert.
Oh, hi.
Or someone.
No aunt. Friend's aunt.
Someone who's had a friend who's talked to you into dropping acid and going to a Fish concert.
It was probably the worst concert I've ever seen in my life. I think a teenager.
Yeah.
And it was at Wolf Trap, which is in Virginia.
Right.
And it was Kenny G, and the tickets were free. And when you're, maybe it was freshman in college, when you're that young, you don't have any money. And so when someone says, hey, these tickets are free,
right,
let's go.
Yeah.
I thought, what the heck?
Why not?
I'll go. I still flashback to that concert.
Yeah, speaking of flashbacks. But that hair, though. Speaking of good hair,
was the least of my problems. Least of my problems with that concert.
Yeah. Did you have to stay for the whole show?
Oh, we had to stay for the whole show.
No.
We went with her family, and it was filled with middle-aged women that were drunk.
Oh,
and they were really excited,
ripping
about
off their shirts and throwing
Kenny,
it up at Kenny.
Really
G.
excited about Kenny,
Kenny!
G's, Kenny's lips.
His lips,
because of how he plays his instrument. Yes. It was disgusting and horrifying for a young woman to have been in that environment, Dave. I honestly,
really?
I'm scarred for life. Yeah.
Oh, no.
I really am.
That's horrific. Was your, and who took you to the show?
It was a friend of mine.
Oh, okay. An older friend? Or?
No, a girl my age. Yeah.
And she was in a Kenny G?
No, I think the tickets were free for her, too, because it was her aunt and her mom and all.
Man.
No, we were casualties.
Casualties of war.
Anyway, getting back to Sarah's book. Sorry.
This is about the connections, really, that are made between the performer and the audience. It's almost like we're witnessing a brilliant show can be this kind of mystical, almost religious experience. And not just for the audience, but for the performer as well. Mm-hmm. And it's that give and take that the performer, just like when you're in front of your faculty giving a beautiful spoken word poetry piece, you feed off of that audience, right? The performer, in this case, feeds off the audience, and the audience feeds off of the performer. So, like I said, this book is set in just the near future. She calls it the after. So there's two parts of this book. They call it the before and the after. So something has happened. There were at the beginning of the book. There's a bomb threats are everywhere. Every hotel in the city. There's bomb threats, and they have to shut down the musical concert that's about to begin. So
they shut down everything. They shut down schools and everything. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of last year when all of the schools in our state, pretty much our Denver metro area, were shut down for a day.
That's right.
Because we had a crazy woman who was threatening to shoot at schools. It was an unspecified threat. We didn't know who it was at the time.
She was obsessed with Columbine.
Yeah.
Hopped on a plane from Miami, and the entire
it just reminded me of
state
that
because
it was shut down,
down
and well, we, people
for
were
an
fearful.
Entire day, yeah.
So even more so is I was in grad school back in about 2000 at College Park, Maryland, and they had the sniper in and around the Baltimore, Washington metro area.
I remember that
the
vividly.
Now, snipers. Yep.
Now, I can't tell you like. The fear and the terror.
Yeah.
I mean, back then I would be pumping gas and you'd be ducking down behind your car.
Yeah, because he was
to keep a low profile. Yeah. But it reminds me more of that incident because you really had this unknown. It wasn't just one person.
It isn't an unknown.
Nobody knew who it was. And everybody was speculating it's some, disgruntled old redneck.
Yeah.
And they eventually caught them.
Yeah.
But like the week or two of terror that actually happened where kids were getting shot, adults were getting shot. It was just so random.
Yeah, entering shopping centers, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yep, and that's what they talk about here, this fear that's going on. Not only are there bombs going off, there's a bomb that blew up during a baseball game that killed thousands of people, destroyed a stadium. There's a mysterious illness that's spreading, that's killing people. And so what they've done, they have banned large public gatherings, so you cannot have. There are no more concerts that you can go to. So this book is alternately narrated by two characters. You have Rosemary, who's a young woman. Now she gets a new job, and her job is to go out. Now because there are no live performances, they have virtual reality concerts. So they have these things. They're not like virtual reality goggles. They're called hoods, and it's basically a hoodie that you wear, and you put this hood over your head, and you're immediately immersed in this virtual reality. And in fact, if you go to a new place, you can scan it, put on your hood, and see if there is a virtual reality based on this place. So I always thought it'd be cool, like go into a 7-Eleven and then see, you can throw on your hood and see if there's any, it's almost like Easter eggs. You know, I feel like an Easter egg wherever you go, throw on this hood to get a different experience. So it wouldn't be like going to the 7-Eleven every time. It might be different. That's how I pictured it. Mm. But I thought it was a really cool way of kind of visualizing the future and making it futuristic.
Because you can't really leave your home because you're scared. So why not create a virtual world?
So this company called Stage Holo, they put on these virtual reality concerts. And Rosemary's job is to go out, seek out and find somewhere, find artists, musical artists that might play, in like someone's basement or these underground shows. And she has to find them, and she's recruiting them to bring on board for this company, Stage Holo, this incredibly massive corporation where the musical artists would now go, would live there. And of course, if you find a band, well, the only person from the band who's going to make it is the one who looks the best and puts on the best show. So the only the most marketable performers are the ones who are going to be able to get recruited and become a part of this corporation. So and what they do is then they go into like a booth, and they're surrounded by cameras, and they're singing for the cameras, and every single movement is recorded. And now when they put on these virtual reality shows, it's like as an audience member, you are immersed into this basically what is now a hologram, and you feel like you're right in front of the performer. But the performer is performing in a booth, and you are in this alternate universe. So it's not a live performance at all.
So I don't know if you've ever, did you ever try Pokemon Go?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
and, and
that is kind of like that.
And to me, what was really interesting is they really do have these virtual reality games. And that's it. And it overlays virtual reality over a real world. And you could wander around in the real world and discover these virtual things. And it really is an interesting concept.
It is an interesting concept,
But the challenge is, you know,
that, I know.
That if you get too immersed in the virtual world,
it's so hard to get out of that.
Yeah.
Well, not
yeah.
just that, but yeah. you still have the real world going around you. So, right. you have all these car accidents.
It's incredibly
and stuff
dangerous.
Where people
yeah.
are paying attention to the virtual world and not pay, and driving
yes.
a car
yeah.
and
yep.
not paying attention to the real world.
But or just walking.
But it is yeah. fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I agree.
Yep. So Rosemary's going out to find musical acts. The other character that you get, her name is Luce. Now, Luce is a singer-musician whose career is just at the point of taking off when these live performances get banned. So what she has to do in order to keep playing, she's playing at these undercover clubs. There's a club in Baltimore. Shout out to Baltimore. There you go, Andrew. There's your Raven shout out. So she's playing at this small club, underground club in Baltimore. And of course, eventually Rosemary and Luce's path connect in this club. And now this is where things get interesting, because on the one hand, you've got this artist, this true artist in Luce, who's sweating it out on stage for a handful of people in this mm-hmm. underground club, really, and pouring her heart and soul into her music. And then you've got Rosemary, who's representing this large corporation and is trying to recruit musical acts. So now you've got the tug and pull of what is art and the artist and, you know, what's real, what's fiction. Just a great concept for a book. Really enjoyed this one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then you also, this is one of the musical artists, one of the musical acts that Rosemary sees has tattoos all over his body. And there's a woman, too, who has this, too. But underneath the tattoos are something called...
they're implants.
Trigger implants.
Yeah.
And if you touch the tattoo in the right place, it actually plays a musical note. So this woman's like holding up her tattoo and she's saying, Rosemary, go ahead, play me. And Rosemary
that
has
really
to,
bothered me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was...
really bothered me.
It gives you the willies to
it
think
really
about.
Did.
It sends like shivers throughout yeah. your body as you're thinking...
That's
kind
a
of
nightmare.
Feeling these, what I kind of pictured as little bumps underneath
yeah,
the
Yeah, I pictured
skin.
That too. Yeah,
and,
little rectangular keypads.
But,
that's what I pictured.
You know, these people have turned their bodies into musical instruments, and
ugh.
It's kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah.
Anyway, really enjoyed this one. Check it out, Andrew. Do you have a? It's all again. It's just about this idea of performing live and, mm-hmm. and what it means. And music is it's a love story about music. Andrew, do you have a favorite concert that you've ever been to?
So we went to, and I'd say. I'm torn between two.
Hmm.
And we went to a Peter Gabriel Sting concert about a year ago
mm-hmm.
Here in Denver.
Timely.
You know, you know, really was an amazing concert, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, real musicians up there. I mean, the great sound of the concert. Wasn't like one of those concerts where they turn it up so loud that your ears are ringing.
Right.
And then I also went to see Billy Idol at the Boulder Theater.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You talked about that on
oh, no,
the show.
No, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you did. That meant a lot to you.
Moni,
yeah,
Moni.
It did. But, and Billy Idol.
Hot
I mean,
in the city.
He could still bring it. Billy Idol and Steve Stevens. And I had no idea that Steve Stevens was such a fantastic
I don't
guitarist.
Know who Steve Stevens is.
But, you know,
never heard of him.
A big concert and a nice little intimate concert setting.
Mm-hmm. What venue was that?
It was the Boulder
was
Theater.
Boulder Theater.
Oh, Boulder Theater.
Yeah,
yep.
Great theater.
Laura, favorite concert?
I don't know if I have one. Probably one of the many, Tori Amos concerts
oh,
I've been
sure.
to back in the
sure,
day,
yeah.
Dave Medicus.
Sure, one of the many Tori, I don't know how many Tori
many,
Amos shows I've been dragged
many,
to.
Tori who?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Back in the early 90s, mid 90s, let's see. To think of who else. You know, recently Macklemore
I mean,
and Ryan
me,
Lewis were
me,
fantastic.
Seeing Macklemore and
it
Ryan
was the
Lewis
Macklemore,
that,
Ryan Lewis. And then the other one
First
that
Bank
honestly
up in Broomfield.
I found very moving and it touched me was Green Day.
Yeah, I was going to say Green Day as well. Green Day just recently, a couple years ago on tour because, and this getting back to A Song for a New
sober.
Day.
They rocked.
Loved performing. They played for
yeah.
3 hours straight and loved it. And at the end, when
tight.
They shot
was
off,
tight.
They shot off the confetti. And it's the end of the show.
Yeah.
And the three of them standing on stage,
I know. It was moving.
Arms
it was
around
moving.
Each other,
mm-hmm.
smiling,
yeah.
looking out at the audience as the confetti is coming down and
I
the
know.
Audience is screaming.
Look at me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
I'm
really
getting
good.
Chills just
mm-hmm.
thinking about it. That
it was probably one of the better ones I've seen.
That's
recently.
The epitome of seeing an artist living in the moment. There
yeah.
you go. They were in the moment without being in the moment and mm-hmm. thinking about being in the moment. Just
but they're pros,
just loving
too.
It. Pros, seasoned pros,
yeah.
but still. You could tell what a thrill it gave them
yeah.
seeing everyone enjoy. And that was a great show. Man, those guys rock.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that is A Song for a New Day by Sarah Pinsker. Check nice. That one out. Let's get to it. That means it's time for our...
All right.
Young adult shout out. Laura, what do you have for us this week?
This week I have Sal and Gabby Break the Universe by Carlos Hernandez.
Mm.
So this is a complicated story to explain. And I don't know how to explain it without giving away some major plot points. So I'm going to dance around it.
Okay.
This book is about two seventh graders, Sal and Gabby. They kind of become friends, kind of. So this is set in Miami. So Sal moves here from Connecticut. He's into magic tricks, and shocker, he's having trouble fitting in to Miami.
Oh, sure.
Gabby, she's head of the student council, she's editor of the school newspaper, and she and Sal are kind of plunged together, and it's a crazy, hilarious story. Sylvia loved this book. It's fantasy fiction. It caught her by surprise because she's always said she doesn't like anything with fantasy in it.
That's right. She has.
She didn't know this book had fantasy in it.
Oh.
And she's was screaming out loud that it had it, and she loved it, and it was awesome.
Oh, that's right. I do remember her shouting from the, we're sitting on yes. the couch and from the bedroom, this is fantasy!
Yes.
But it's okay!
I love it!
That's right.
Yeah, and then one yeah. other aside, we had a fire in our brand new fire pit the other night. Thank you, Dave Medicus.
Sure.
You're and welcome. Sylvia had her reading light out, which is like right. a white headlamp, and was reading by the fire pit, but it was so bright and
couldn't
annoying.
Tear herself
but
I, away from
as
the
a parent, I'm happy to see her reading, so I didn't want to yep. say anything. So anyway, it's called Sal and Gabby Break the Universe by Carlos Hernandez.
Awesome. Check that one out. That mm-hmm. is our YA shout out of the week.
The library is officially open.
Laura Medicus.
What do you have for us this week?
Okay, I have a very satisfying book.
Satisfying. Mm-hmm. All right.
It's called Craven Manor by Darcy Coates.
Oh, yeah.
So in addition to the paranormal, I'm also a fan of shapeshifters.
Who isn't? I mean, really.
I do love a shapeshifter.
Love a
shout
good
out to Charlene Harris.
Yeah.
I love shapeshifters.
Yep.
Yep. And I'm a fan of reading about someone who fixes up an old house or an old garden. Love books like that.
That's weird. As an interior designer, I don't know why that you would be into that.
Love it. When that's integrated into a fictional story, I just love it.
Again, that's the difference between you and I. I will do not read books about teachers.
So are we going back to your obsession with Bigfoot romance novels?
I think we are.
That's right. How'd you know? So this book hits all three of those things. It's got paranoia. It's got paranormal. It's got shapeshifters.
Yep.
And it's got a fixer upper.
Oh, it's the trifecta. Mm-hmm. It's the trifecta.
Yeah. So I read this book.
Yeah, boy.
Like it was a bag of caramel popcorn that was all mine.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And one funny thing about this book is you, Dave, you brought a whole stack of horror home from the library the other day.
I did.
And you announced to me, because I was like, what's
this? I said, don't touch. Just like my caramel popcorn, don't touch.
I'm getting my October reads ready.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And then I started looking, and this book just, it had paranormal fixer upper, you know, it's paranormal fixer upper, which should be a new category. It
pretty much like shot right into your hand. You're like, mine, all mine.
I did. This elbows out, ladies. Yeah. I'm going in.
She sharpened up her elbows, stuck me one in the gut, and said, this one is mine.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, I think I'm going to get all my haunted readings out of the way before October even.
You know,
hits.
This would be a good time.
And
to
then
tell,
I'll be tired of all of that and I'll be on to something
to
new.
To tell Andrew his assignment for the podcast is to read horror books and recommend horror
he
books.
He doesn't
for
like
October.
Horror. But Andrew I do want to hear him say the word horror.
Horror.
Oh, well, you didn't.
He usually says horror.
You usually have a New England accent when you
but
say
yeah,
horror.
We are going to focus, at least Laura and I will focus on
I don't
on
know
some
if I will, Dave. I'm just letting you know I might get my horror
well, you're gonna have
out
to step back. Okay.
in September. All right. So this book starts out in a kind of a depressed part of the world that's unspecified. Couldn't tell exactly where this was written.
Baltimore?
No, because there's Spanish moss in the trees, she mentions.
Oh, okay. All right.
But it also did feel like it could have been Baltimore at some points. But anyway, it's unspecified with a young man named Daniel who's out of a job. He's renting a room from his cousin who's really not doing much better than he is.
Mm.
He's in a depressing boarding house with a few other people. Everyone in this world that they live in is just barely scraping by. He gets a letter one day addressed to him. saying that the job of groundskeeper for Craven Manor is his if he wants it. Ah. Handwritten letter. Gives him directions, says he can report at once. There's a groundskeeper cottage available to him, and he will be paid in advance once he starts.
Hmm.
So just like a lot of stories like this, there's a single person with their back against the wall.
Right.
There's an offer that's too good to refuse.
Yeah, classic premise. Classic premise.
Yeah,
love it.
There's a lot of weird caveats always that come with this premise when it's a single person, mm-hmm. and they usually end up having to take it because of circumstances beyond their control. So no visitors. Stay inside the cottage from midnight to dawn with the door locked.
It's like gremlins.
I know. The drapes shut. What? Do not open the door no matter what you hear.
Oh, man.
So, of course, a few things happen with his room and his job situation, and he decides to check it out. He can always quit. Okay, so here's the fixer-upper part that I really enjoyed.
Yes.
The home that he goes up to has been sitting empty for years and years.
Okay.
It's described as a 200-year-old manor.
Ooh.
There's a black cat that's running around. There's a murder of crows that like to hang out on the property. Mm-hmm. The gardens are overgrown, but he can see the bones of what they once were. There were formal gardens. There's paths.
Okay.
There's a sculpture garden. There's a tomb there that he's supposed to take care of. And then there's a tidy little groundskeeper's cottage that is stocked with food, and it's kind of neat and organized. Off the grid, though.
Of course. We got to be off the grid for
a book like this. He decides to stay, and he starts clearing out brush and making things tidy. And that, like, the descriptions of him cleaning and tending.
Sure, that's your jam.
They were really satisfying
to me. I
can
picture the movie montage.
Uh-huh. You know. So here's the creepy undertones. So Daniel doesn't meet the person who wrote him the letter the first night. He just communicates with him via letters. He wanders around this house, the big manor.
It really is off the grid.
And it appears that the inhabitants of the home left in a hurry, like suddenly, but a very, very long time ago. And there's also a tower with a locked door that he's instructed under no circumstances, do not open this. And when he gets close to it, he can sense that there's something malevolent on the other side. So the book is a great setup. Whoa. This young man is now staying by himself on the grounds of this strange, decidedly haunted manor, and he's communicating with his employer via letters only. So strange things do happen at night. There's a lot of fun twists and turns. I actually didn't find the book scary. I found it immensely enjoyable. It's not like a super frightful book.
Yeah.
It really isn't. It's not, I don't think, even designed to be super frightful.
Okay.
So if you're looking for a fun haunted house fixer-upper book,
who is it?
You know you are. Check this out. This author has a new book out called Hunted that sounds fantastic.
To save money on printing, all you got to do is just take out the A from Haunted. And
well, it's
be
called.
Haunted.
It's actually called Craven Manor. It's not called Haunted.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, my bad.
You're bad. Yeah. She's also written quite a few other books. So if you like this one, Craven Manor.
Okay, Craven Manor.
By Darcy Coates.
All right, very good. That was reviewed by
Laura Medicus.
So Laura was going to ask the question, but the premise, you explained it. But you know, I've learned anytime you take a job, you always ask, what happened to the guy, my predecessor?
To the guy before.
And so he had no opportunity to ask that question.
He didn't have an opportunity. Yeah. No.
That is a good question to ask.
It is a good question to ask. In this case, though, I will say, no spoilers here, didn't look like there was someone with a job like that before.
Maybe our new middle school art teacher will ask that same question.
What happened to the old art teacher?
And your guidance counselor.
What happened to the old guidance counselor?
They watched a live performance of
someone gave her a poem.
Drawing on a dry erase board. And
to Wu-Tang Clan.
A lot of shit went down.
What?
All right. Let's get to my book. So the book that I'm going to recommend this week is called Kill File. And that's all one word, Kill File. This is written by Christopher Farnsworth. Now, this book is a thriller with a twist.
The twist.
That's right. Now, the twist in this book is that the main character can read minds. Oh, yeah. Now, he's got the very generic name of John Smith. And there's a guy who kind of grew up without an identity. He grew up in a series of foster homes until the CIA. Now, of course, if you have some kind of special skill or special talent, mm-hmm. like being able to read minds, you know, yeah. eventually the CIA is going to get a hold of you.
I know two things.
Yeah.
One, you're not going to have any friends.
No, that's true.
Two, actually three things. Two, you might end up hating people.
Can you imagine hanging out with
hating
someone
people.
Who could read your mind?
No, because I'm an insane person anyway
yeah.
with my mindfulness. Stuff right. that I have to put myself through.
Oh my
I can't
God.
Even imagine being aware no. they're muting my mind.
And if you could,
because then I just would start talking to them through my mind.
yeah,
and they would hate me yeah. ultimately.
And it would be a very one-way conversation.
Yeah.
So this guy, of course, the CIA gets a hold of him and uses his own special set of skills in the Middle East
huh.
to basically interrogate terrorists. And he's going to huh. help find out where Osama bin Laden
now,
is.
Now, does he have to know the language then?
Whoa, you know what? That is a really good, that's a good question.
I guess you don't think.
Do you think in your own language?
I feel like I do.
Wow, I think you might have
uncovered a little secret.
Wow, I don't know. That's a really good question.
Maybe you just get impressions.
We'll have to get Christopher Farnsworth on the show.
And imagine what he was thinking.
And then mm-hmm. he'll tell you, now I got to go rewrite the entire book.
No, I'm sure he's thought of that.
No, I don't know. Anyway, he seems to be able to have no problem reading their mind. So I guess he's just picking up on
brain waves. Honestly, you would just get impressions
you know?
From
yeah,
somebody.
Yeah. And
yeah.
that's exactly what he does.
When I can tell you for most of the science fiction I read,
uh-huh.
Or
oh, yeah,
fantasy.
Oh. That problem, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, but they always say it's images.
It's images, yeah. That makes more sense.
Now, not only can John Smith...
So then my trying to talk at that person through my mind would not work.
It would not work. Okay. But this is what makes this guy even worse of a guy to kind of hang out with and watch football. Because not... Or whatever. Whatever the hell you're going to do.
Oh.
Well, you know, can you tell we're 20 minutes away from the Falcons game starting.
Man,
so
we gotta hurry
I might
this
have
up.
To hit pause and hit record on the
might
DVR
have to.
As I just renewed the DirecTV. No, I'm going to take my time with this book.
Okay. Right,
so that's why we'll record
it. It's not going to take you 20 minutes.
It might. No, okay. I got a lot to say. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. So
this is Dave Medicus after
true,
all.
That's true. That's true.
Yes. So he can not only read minds, but this guy can push his own thoughts
oh.
into your mind and make you think a different thing. So he can alter
oh, he's so
your
dangerous.
Thoughts. Yeah.
He's so dangerous.
So dangerous. In fact, the book starts out with this great scene where we got our guy John Smith is working for a billionaire. And the billionaire's daughter has been kidnapped and is being held for ransom.
Mm.
So John Smith is talking to the kidnapper in a diner or coffee shop.
Hmm.
And he's trying to figure out, based on the guy's brainwaves, where the girl is being held captive.
Hmm.
But as he's talking to him, he can sense a guy across the street in a hotel room with a sniper rifle pointed at his own head. So he
whoa.
Knows the sniper is got the bead on him and is going to kill him, is about to kill him. So as he's interrogating this
just
kidnapper.
Just like Andrew at the gas station.
Exactly, yes. This guy, instead of ducking ugh. And shoulder rolling out of the coffee shop, all he has to do, and this is what he does.
Let's push something.
He pushes something into the sniper's mind. Mm. So the sniper thinks he's staring at John Smith. But guess who he's actually staring at? And he's got the target on. He's got the target on his partner, and he shoots his partner, thinking he's shooting John Smith. Boom! That's
nice.
How that's how John Smith rolls.
Sounds like a good book.
So, yeah. So what I liked about this book is, and that's just the beginning. That's how it all gets kicked off.
Hmm.
So I love the uniqueness about it. You know, I've read a few books about characters who can read minds.
Is
speaking
this guy
of
a jerk?
Suki,
by the way.
Christopher Farnsworth. I've
no,
never met
no,
him. That's
John
a terrible
Smith.
Thing
John
to
Smith.
Say about an author. Oh, John Smith. He, you know, he's a
does
woman.
Does he use his powers for
the worst
for
you can say about him is he's a womanizer.
Oh, shocker.
But he's not a guy. Like, if I had this power, I would definitely use it for evil, but he does not.
Hmm.
Captain John Smith, he was a heck of a guy.
Once again, going back to middle school, a song parody that Andrew and I wrote. That's right.
Whoa. Wow.
That was,
got a good mind, Andrew.
I'll tell you some of the things he did in his life
and why. Captain John Smith
brilliant.
Was born in 1580. Hasn't been around lately. Oh, yeah. Look, it might have been 1680. I don't know. I don't know.
1680 makes more sense.
Yeah, wow. The beginnings. That's right. It was called The Beginnings of American Lit.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, that was we wrote that for Miss Hampton. Hampton's class, 7th grade, 8th grade. Yep.
Listeners, I apologize. I could not miss that opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. Good callback. Anyway, So he's not a bad guy. Definitely not. He's a guy you can root for.
So the worst he does is use his powers on women.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem he doesn't make.
Can you blame him?
He doesn't. I want to make this clear. He's not pushing into their minds that he's this.
They need to go out
like
with him.
He's Fabio, if I can reference Fabio.
Wow. You know,
well, it's a book podcast.
Okay, you know,
he's
sure.
A famous book model. I guess he's a good-looking guy because women seem to be attracted to him.
Okay.
That's all I got to say.
Okay.
But are they really attracted to him, or is he just like projecting?
That's the thing.
Is he projecting, you know?
Doesn't matter, I guess.
Maybe, yeah, doesn't matter.
Same thing.
Imagine how well that would work.
Yeah.
On like dating and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I mean, it would be easy. Life would be easy.
But here's the thing. Would it be too easy?
No. it would be wonderful.
You get tired of it after a while, I would think. I would think you'd want the challenge, right?
Yeah.
Having everything go your way? Yeah.
So the plot in this book,
I'll try it out for a while.
Involves a billionaire owner of a tech company. This guy thinks a former employee has stolen an algorithm away from him and used that algorithm to start his own company. So now John Smith has to get this algorithm back by infiltrating this other guy's mind and make him forget anything he ever knew about this algorithm. It's a really fun story. It's action-packed. It's fast-paced. There's humor. There's you keep flashing back to Smith's workings in the Middle East, but it really helped flesh out the character. There's that smidgen of romance in it. Everything you could want in a thriller, especially this unique twist on the mind reader aspect of it. This is mind-melding and brain-teasing stuff. It'll make you look twice at that coworker of yours who's staring at you as you continue on your day having your basic thought process. Make sure you don't want anyone getting inside that head.
No.
Make sure that doesn't
happen. Don't think they'd want in there.
Check it out. The book is called Kill File. It's written by Christopher Farnsworth. It's quirky. It's fast-paced. Fresh twist on mind mentalism for discerning thriller fans everywhere. And that is
Dave Medicus
recommending that one for you. Andrew? What,
Andrew Dowd,
are you going to lay on us today?
So I stumbled on a little book.
Mm-hmm. Sure you did. Stumbled on it in the ether.
He was chuckling. Dave, you left.
Yes.
I don't know where you were going. Andrew and I were down here.
I went
to
get
chuckling.
My Coca-Cola Classic
okay.
out of
he
the
was
fridge in the garage.
Chuckling over the book that he had
And you'll see. There's some interesting things.
Okay.
And so, and we will participate in this journey together. Listeners, you can follow along when we get to that point.
Okay. Oh, dear.
I want you to hold our hands, listener. Mentally, close your eyes as if you were in a faculty meeting.
All right.
And close your eyes.
Now, first of all, I want to say is, you know, a couple months ago, I basically talked about I want to go back to the public library and I want to look for books in the public library.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I mean, I just don't have the time to get there. So I'm still reading electronic books and I will make an effort to get back to the public library.
Yeah, because the bad thing about the library is they don't have a website, so there's no way to actually get on the internet and look at books that are available at the library through the internet. That's the problem with the library.
I understand what he wants. He wants the visceral.
And that's it. I want to browse the shelves.
He wants the browsing, the holding, the picking up, the touching.
You know, talk.
I would say don't beat yourself up about that.
There is something to that.
But I just want to say, as far as we've got different types of listeners, and I mean, you guys are avid library visitors.
I don't go though to browse. I go to pick up stuff I've
yeah,
requested.
At this point, although there are, I would have to say, a couple of books that for this podcast that I've recommended. In fact, the last one was Gravesend by William Boyle that I found just by browsing the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something to that,
and I enjoy that, but it just. You know, is struggling to find the time
it's
to.
Okay,
to,
you'll so, have it at some point.
So that's what I used to love about going into Blockbuster Video.
Oh yeah,
you know,
oh,
just browsing the shelves
that was fun.
And
good
discovering
memories.
A memory. Yeah, sure. A video. Yep.
So this book is King's Dark Tidings.
Okay.
The author is Kel Cade, K E L Kade.
Kade. That's a great okay, name. That's I like not... that name. That
well, hang on. Don't do anything yet. Listeners, don't do anything. Because
right. Don't do anything.
We're going to get through this, and then we're going to do some interesting
Lars
things.
Lars taking her hands away from the Google. She stepped away from the Google machine.
Well, I always write Andrew's book titles down and Dave's too, so I can
So the book is...
them.
Is 1,905 Whoa. Pages long.
Wow. Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, I read these things electronically.
1,900.
If you want, you can Google the book, King's Dark Tidings. And because it's an ebook, it's an estimated number of pages.
Okay, estimated number. But, okay.
But look it up, and it basically says it's 1,905 pages. And I researched this in two different areas.
I'm going to look up the longest book ever written.
On the Kindle version, it says 1,905 pages. And then when I looked it up on Goodreads, it said 1,900 or Kindle.
Oh, my goodness.
We should figure out how many words are in that book.
Yeah. So anyways, the book starts out, and somebody is writing. A writer is, you know, it's like medieval times or something like that. And so a writer is writing, mm-hmm. and he finishes his journey, and there's all this trepidation about he's gotten to this point. Obviously, it was a harrowing, life-threatening journey. Mm-hmm. I mean, and this author really takes you there. And so basically, he gets there, and the guy is like, well, do you have it? And he's like, yes, I have it. Mm. And so he's like, well, give it to me. And then he's like, well, here it is. Or here he is. And it's a baby boy.
Oh.
And the guy's like, no, it is not a boy. It is a weapon.
Oh.
And so it's this description of
a child.
You know, he's thinking of it as like a child, but this guy's like, no, it's an it. It is a weapon.
Huh.
And that's how the book starts. Well, then
is it like Adolf Hitler as a baby?
No. Well, I mean, you know, interesting, but not along those lines. And so the book, the character's name is Rezkin. And Rezkin basically, he's brought to this remote, secretive place. And he is, and there's mystery around, well, who is he? Mm-hmm. He doesn't know who he is. And only a couple people that are there actually know who this boy is. And so he is raised. And he is raised to, by this code, and to study martial arts and things like that. Like his whole life is about martial arts and all these different things. And so it visits, he's 6 years old. And so the next time it visits, he's 6 years old, and he's basically like fighting this martial arts battle as a 6 year old, right?
Wow.
I mean, and he is a 6 year old, he is a deadly tool. And then the book goes further on, and he's 17. And at 17, you know, he can take on like 15 hardened expert warriors by himself. And so,
warriors or warriors?
See, yeah. There's a difference. He has a Andrew has an accent though, and I love hearing it. I like hearing when he says "hara,"
and then warriors. A bunch of people sitting around worrying about stuff. Those would be your warriors.
I speak fluent German, some French, and the thing is, when you learn these different languages,
it does affect.
Yeah, that's true.
It does affect how you say things.
Good point.
And sometimes I never know.
Which is right.
I don't know how to orient myself on something. So
I just had to say that.
I was going to let that one pass, Dave.
You noticed it too, though, right?
Of course I did.
So basically, an interesting premise is, as the boy does these battles, he starts talking about rules. And so rule number 6, do not get injured.
Oh, here's another book with rules.
Rule number 12.
Going back to your book.
Oh, yeah. But these are different rules.
Do not make a sound. Rule number 10.
Do not feed it after midnight.
Do not leave evidence. Rule number 17. Never complain.
Huh.
Now, first of all, I wonder who Kalkade is, because anybody with kids.
Yeah.
You know, especially rule number 17.
Never complain.
I mean, come on. And so.
Who is this guy? Let's look him up.
It's an interesting premise for the book. Okay, so hang on.
Oh, he doesn't want you to look him up. Yes. Oh, don't.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Don't go there.
Don't go there.
All right.
I have not.
Is it D.K. Goldberg?
So I wonder. And so I wonder.
This is a pen name for someone.
Well,
of course.
And so we might as well go there now. So Laura, I want you to do this.
Thank you.
Why does Laura get
Google
to do this?
Kalkade?
I can do this.
There's some controversy in terms of who Kalkade is. Now go to images. No. Google. Go to images.
Okay.
And then look down there and let me know if you
Dave,
see.
Stop. Get off.
Let me
get
know.
Off.
Let me know if you see a familiar picture.
I do.
And so. And
oh my gosh.
Yes.
It's your favorite gorgeous woman.
And so you look down, it's a picture of Melissa McPhail.
It's
so when
our favorite gorgeous fantasy writer.
Yeah. Now.
Oh.
And so.
Is this by her?
What? so there's some speculation as to whether Kelcade is actually the male author that you actually will see an image of in the bio, or
what?
Or is it a pen name? Is it a pen name for somebody else? Now, I had to Google this because I'm sitting there thinking, did they have kids? Because rule number 17, I'm sorry, that's a bit of a red herring here. I'm like, yeah, this is definitely somebody that doesn't
have... Well, she has kids, though.
Doesn't have kids, and she does. But it's just strange that when you Google Kelcade, a couple of the images that comes up is of Melissa McPhail.
Yeah, and also people are speculating on Kelcade's website, is Kelcade a male or female? Personally, I think it's a fake name for a well-known author.
Huh.
It doesn't
weird.
Say he or she in the biography.
But there is a picture of the red-haired guy.
As well.
But that could be, you know, when...
That
when
could be you or I,
you know,
with glasses.
Well, yeah, because, you know, when Stephen King came out with the Richard Bachman books, he had a fake, you know, he got like a model to pose as Richard Bachman. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
In fact, he published the first four Bachman books as Richard Bachman until before the fifth one came out when... a nosy journalist uncovered the truth and spilled the beans.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, because he said Richard Bachman was just getting ready to hit the bestseller charts on his own merits, not as a Stephen King pseudonym.
So this is something, you know, we're not searching for, but it's just interesting coincidences. Well, now, listeners,
I'm fascinated.
About five episodes back,
fascinated
this guy
now.
Could just
we,
be,
we actually reviewed a Melissa McPhail book.
Her brother-in-law's...
Yeah. And I accused you, Andrew, of reading her book because she is stunning. Because Andrew then went through a series of fantasy authors who were gorgeous. And I was like, yeah. Hey, hang on a second. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is fascinating.
And so, a little more about the book.
Hmm.
And so, basically, you've got all these rules. Now, there's one rule that's like 243. So, I don't know how many total rules there are.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it says somewhere in the book. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of rules. And so, basically, he's raised in this environment devoid of everything except for this focused training according to the rules. And so, towards the end of his training, he gets to the point where he can infiltrate, he can... You know, he can kill people. I mean, basically all according to this rules. Now,
ninja status.
He does not learn what rule. He does not know what rules one and two are. And so he gets to this. And this is early in the book, so I don't think I'm giving too much away.
Okay.
And so the guy who trains him says, okay, now I want you to kill everybody. Right. And so some of the rules are. You don't question authority. Maybe that's like rule 243 or something. So anyways,
a lot of rules.
So he basically kills everybody. And so one of the guys that's his master and one guy escapes. And so one person, he realizes he's killed like 15 people,
mm-hmm.
but one person has managed to escape. Right. And he still does not know who he is.
Huh.
Right.
Yeah.
And so one person's managed to escape. And so the one guy that he knows, who really has been his mentor this whole time, is laying there dying. And so he basically says, well, what are rules number one and two?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you got to get it out of him before the guy dies.
And so rule number two is kill with conscience. And so so he tells him rule number two.
Hmm.
And then rule number one is protect and honor your, and he doesn't finish it.
Hmm.
And then
initially, but then he drags them out of it. And then it's protect and honor your friends.
You made it sound, hold on, you made it sound like he was going to die before getting it out.
Well,
that'd be a completely different book.
Let me teach you a thing or two about dramatic pause.
Okay. the student has become the master.
Yeah. So
what was the rule again? I'm sorry.
Protect and honor your friends.
Okay.
So part of this is he's been raised in such a unique environment devoid mm-hmm. of anything that we would consider normal. He doesn't even know what a friend is. He's like, well, what is a friend?
Oh, man.
He doesn't have friends. And so the friend is a foreign concept. And that's one of the things I like about this book is it puts you into this environment. It is this amazing world. I mean, 1,905 pages just for the first book. And there's three more books in the series.
I just figured out who Kelcade is.
Whoa, look at this. What Andrew could not accomplish in a week's time, Laura has done in five minutes.
Well, see, I did not try and accomplish this because I am not trying to.
You didn't want to.
I did not want to. Sometimes I do not want to lift the curtain.
That's true.
Yeah.
Or pull the curtain back. Absolutely. I understand. Laura, please elucidate us on the.
I'm still not sure. So,
let me finish. Let me finish.
The mystery deepens. Laura will work on that as you finish.
So part of what is, again, is it paints this really vivid world where, you know, you create this concept of this boy who was raised in this way as a weapon. And he really is just this unbelievable weapon. And then he goes out into the real world with no real experience. And then this boy, because he is still a young boy, young man, and you get to see how he experiences things. Now, I don't take the book too seriously. And some of this is kind of, it is somewhat comedic, is how does this person, you know, interact with people? You know, but it's kind of like in Star Trek, you have Data, you know, or you have Spock who doesn't have emotions. And,
right.
And that's part of it is in you take these characters, which are created sort of without humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they don't have humanity, they are flawed. And then they therefore are more human.
Right.
Because of the flaw. And I think that's one of the interesting premises of this book. And so the book is King's Dark Tidings by quote-unquote Kelcade.
He's Kelcade, doing the finger quotes.
Listen, Kelcade is a woman.
Whoa.
Yeah, boy!
I don't know if she identifies as a they, perhaps, though.
That's what I meant.
Now, but before we reveal this, will Kelcade
come on the show?
Want us to
because here's how to find out. If you hashtag on Instagram, people love meeting authors. And I noticed that Kelcade was supposed to be at book signings for BookCon.
Okay, there you go.
And so the publisher, Tor Books, has Kelcade and a bunch of other authors signing books, meeting fans.
Okay.
And this person looks female and has a name tag that says Kelcade on it.
There you go.
And they advertise it on the publishing thing that she is signing books.
All right. Very good. That is Kelcade right there. That is not Melissa McPhail.
Not Melissa McPhail. However, Melissa McPhail's picture comes up because she listed a Kelcade book as what she was reading on her own blog.
Oh.
I think that's why she comes up.
All right. That makes sense.
Because she is a Kelcade fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is
interesting, right?
That is a long book. I looked up the longest
book. Gosh, that's a long book.
Apparently, the number one longest book is
The
Blah Story by Nigel Tom. Ended up at 7,312 pages.
Oh. I don't think you can call that a book.
No, thank you.
L. Ron Hubbard appears at number 5 with Mission Earth. A bunch of books I've never heard of.
And you know, here's what's funny is Mission Earth is such a long book.
Yeah.
But such a crappy movie. I mean, how did they do it?
I never saw it.
You saw it?
Yeah, I did see it.
1.2 million words. Do you think if you're Kelcade and you wrote a book that's 1900 pages, do you when you finish typing the end to it, how do you go back and edit a book like revise it? Or are you just like, that's it, there you go.
I'm done.
There you go, I'm done.
You have to have a certain type of mind to be able to do that, which clearly she has.
How long could it have taken her to write a book like that?
I'm amazed with authors that they are able to create these worlds, these virtual worlds.
Certain authors really are.
Yep. And then really execute that and put that on paper.
Yep. And it's men and women. It's not just a... It's interesting how many female fantasy writers there are. And I think perhaps she doesn't want to know she's female because there's a lot of, I mean, her book's kind of, there's a male protagonist.
Right,
and
yeah, you might not necessarily.
Maybe don't want to put off, I don't know, just speculating. Yep. I don't know that it matters in this day and age, though.
That's true. It really doesn't.
I don't think anyone
says, well, you're a man, you can't write about a woman or back and forth. Everybody nowadays is writing about everybody else.
Kind of. You do get in trouble a little bit, though. Kind of like when you assign gender to bitch.
That's right. That's true.
I mean, you really do, because people say, oh, you're co-opting my experience.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
men ever get to say that, though, about a woman writer.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to give me a book recommendation or something.
That is Andrew's Book of the Week. So let's get to it. It's time for the
Audiobook of the Week.
So the audiobook of the week this week is called The Cold Dish. This is written by Craig Johnson, and this is the first book in his popular Longmire series.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of the Longmire series?
Of course. Yes,
yeah, so they turned this into a very popular series on A&E for a couple of seasons, and then it went to Netflix. And
who's in that?
So it's
is
this
that Kevin Costner or somebody?
No, I'm not sure of the guy's name, okay. But you can find it on Netflix. It went for six long seasons, and I guess it just stopped in 2017. Now, I listen to this book because we are going to have Craig Johnson on the show in a couple of weeks.
That's exciting.
Actually, I ended up absolutely loving this
book. You've never read a Longmire book.
I've never read a Longmire book, and this is a great introduction to it. This is the first book in the series. And what is not to like? You got a small town sheriff, this guy, Walt Longmire.
Mm-hmm.
He's been sheriff for about 25 years in this small town in Wyoming. He's riding out what he believes to be his last term as sheriff. He's got his habits include drinking beer while watching ghostly shapes through the static of his old TV set while trying to get over the recent death of his wife.
Oh.
So you got this guy,
depressive.
He's also sarcastic. He's cantankerous.
Mm.
He's a little bit. Is it cantankerous?
Cantankerous.
Because you can.
What do you think of
this? I don't know.
Cantankerous. It's cantankerous.
He's cantankerous. He's also a wee bit curmudgeon-y, and this book...
I would not have guessed.
You get to spend a lot of time with him, and I found it to be time well spent, all the more so because the narrator... Now listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
The audiobook narrator of this one is George Guidel.
Oh.
And not only is George Guidel a...
who do we hear? We heard about that from another writer.
He is a recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Audio Publishers Association, but you'll remember him from our talk with Chris Sorensen.
That's his name, Chris Sorensen.
Chris Sorensen is also a narrator.
Mm-hmm. And a writer.
And he met them. He told a story about how he met the man at a party and had to work up his nerve to go talk to George Guidel.
Is it Goodell or Guidel?
Well, I've heard it on
both ways.
I've heard it both ways.
Okay.
So it's in either case, as far as Chris Sorensen would have pronounced it, he might as well have been saying John Wayne, because to him, that was kind of like the mythic epic status that he'd achieved.
That's so cool.
And speaking of John Wayne, this book, Cold Dish, is evocative of the American West. I mean, you could almost feel the sun dipping beneath the Wyoming mountains. There's a good deal in here about Cheyenne culture. There's some mysticism in this book.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Now, does our good sheriff, does he partake of that mysticism? Does he believe in that?
Well, I mean, there are some things that he sees to be out of his control.
Okay.
And maybe these are things he doesn't know what to do about.
Okay.
Right? I'm not going to give too much away.
So he's not like a black and white type of guy. Is he a little more gray?
Yeah, I would say so.
That's
for
good.
Sure. Yeah.
I like
now,
characters like that.
And of course, there's a mystery to be solved. There is a love interest for him.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Which is a lot of fun, especially because he's still, you know, it's been a little, it's not too long since his wife died, but just to see this guy trying to dip his toes back into it and really not know what he's doing.
Sounds great.
Add some humor to it. There are, it really just belongs to this. Well, it's almost like, I know it's a mystery book, but to me it came across as almost a character study
of
this
guy.
Like a Western with this guy, Walt Longmire. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is George Guidel reading from A Cold Dish by Craig Johnson.
Where are you guys? About a mile past the old Hudson Bridge on 137. All right, you hang on. I'll get somebody out there in a half hour or so. Yes, sir. Hey, Sheriff. I waited. Dan says for you to bring beer. We're almost out. You bet. I punched the button and looked at Ruby. Where's Vic? Well, she's not sitting in her office looking at old reports. Where is she, please? Her turn to sigh, and never looking at me directly, she walked over, took the worn manila folder from my chest, and returned it to the filing cabinet where she always returns it when she catches me studying it.
So this is a mystery, of course. It's steeped in open spaces and mountain vistas of Wyoming, a big land, with not a lot of people, but just enough hope for the future as the crimes of the past are avenged in this cold dish that is referenced in the title. This is a great introduction to this fascinating character. It's there's now 15 novels in this series. Well, I just got the latest one, Land of Wolves. I'm looking forward to reading that one, and especially looking forward to talking to Craig Johnson in a couple of weeks. So look forward to that. In the meantime, before we do talk to him, be sure and listen to this one, The Cold Dish, read by George Guidel. You will not be disappointed. And that is your
audiobook of the week.
That's our show for this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please, if you did listen, I noticed we got some new subscribers this week. So please, 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 if you have not subscribed to the show yet, make sure you subscribe. That way you don't have to worry about finding it. It'll always be wherever you are. Hit us up on Snapchat. We do not have a Snapchat. Why would you hit us up on Snapchat?
Why did you say that?
I don't know why. Twitter. Twitter is a place to go. Instagram. Instagram is a place to go. And Facebook. We put up pictures pretty much every day. You can check those out. I got a good one. John Mars liked my most recent picture of myself trapped in my truck. Kim took it as...
Kim, the art teacher.
Yep. Pretending to be trapped in my truck as I'm holding up the passengers. I'm pretending to be a passenger in this. So good shtick. I thought it was some good shtick.
It was a great shtick.
John Mars really liked the picture of his book. So check that out. Again, subscribe to us on iTunes, wherever else you are. We really appreciate you listening to us. This is The Inside Flap. My name is Dave Medicus. I'm going to commandeer the quote from Andrew this week. Quote, "The beginnings of American Lit. Well, it started such a long time ago. There was Bird and Bradford and Captain John Smith and a bunch of other people you know." See you next week.
Andrew Dowd, heads or tails?
Oh, all right. Bye. We recommend Craven Manor by Darcy Coates, Killfile by Christopher Farnsworth, and King's Dark Tidings by Kel Cade. Audiobook of the week is The Cold Dish by Craig Johnson, narrated by the incomparable George Guidel.
Look at you with your blueberries.
That's alright. I kind of like it. This kind of thing just comes around. I try to roll and knocks me down. I think I like it. I'm just trying to get by. I'm just trying not to ask too many questions, 'cause you get too many answers when you do. When you do. I found a pirate's map last night, but no pirate was in sight. It's on my shoulder. That marks a spot, but it seems someone forgot to place the landmarks that would help me figure out just where to go. So I don't know. I'm just trying to get by. I'm just trying not to ask too many questions, to get too many answers when you chasing that old treasure when I find it. So I'm looking for a face to match the picture in my mind. Trying to get by, I'm just trying not to ask too many questions, to get too many answers when you ask too many questions.